You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, ISIS terror attack in Manchester, England, kills 22, including children. Meanwhile, Donald Trump tried to get intel chiefs to stop the Comey investigation. There's another word that you could use in that situation. He tried or was attempting to obstruct the Comey investigation. Meanwhile, Dodd-Frank, now essentially dead. New poll has Ossoff in lead in Georgia. And Trump's budget, an homage to Paul Ryan. Fox News staffers embarrassed by Sean Hannity. Not really news, but it's just fun to say. And in a hugely important case, SCOTUS slams North Carolina's racist voting redistricting plan. And congratulations, folks. Total student debt now twice what it was in 2008. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Really horrific attack in England. 22 dead. We know that they have confirmed that at least two of these, at least one was an eight-year-old child. The other, one other that has been identified at this point, 18-year-old. It was a concert by Ariana Grande. So attracted a lot of kids and teenagers. The bomber has been identified. ISIS has taken, has claimed credit for it. Apparently the explosion took place essentially in the, almost like, a foyer, where people were exiting. So the concert had let out, people were streaming out of the building. And apparently this bomber went in and blew himself up, as well as killing 22 people and 50 in the hospital. Really horrific. Not much more to say about that. I guess Donald Trump is bound to try and use this. And, you know, it is, it's probably on some level, a matter of time until we have something like this here. And frankly, I still contend that it's surprising that we don't, but, to a large extent, it has been a function of maintaining an atmosphere in this country that does not isolate immigrants and immigrant communities, and that does not isolate Muslim communities. So there's just a broader awareness of people who may travel. Now, I don't know if this guy traveled, but my understanding is that he did. But I don't, you know, at the beginning of these things, you barely can trust any of the information you get. But they are very concerned in Britain with the number of people who have traveled to Syria or, I guess, Iraq, trained with ISIS, and then come back. And so, and harder to keep track of those people, particularly when you have situations where you're creating slums and where you have isolated communities. So, and, but of course, you know, we're told that the key is to isolate these communities more because if you do, if you don't, the fascists will. But, all right, well, leaving that aside, Donald Trump came out with his budget proposal today. And it is as much of a disaster as you can imagine. Here is Mick Mulvaney. Now, Mick Mulvaney, reminder, was one of the Freedom Caucus founders in the House. And this budget, this White House budget, really is far more Mick Mulvaney and the Republicans in the House and Paul Ryan than it is anything else. I mean, I don't think that Donald Trump has really any ideological grounding, so it's hard to say this is not Donald Trump's. Everything is and nothing is.
I'm flexible.
But the principles outlined here are what Republicans have been chasing for years. I mean, I would say decades, but yeah, probably decades. Listen to Mick Mulvaney explain this.
That we looked at this budget through the eyes of the people who were actually paying the bills. I think for years and years, we've simply looked at a budget in terms of the folks who are on the back end of the programs, the recipients of the taxpayer money. And we haven't spent nearly enough time focusing our attention on the people who pay the taxes. I got a couple questions yesterday. I know I will today about compassion. Compassion needs to be on both sides of that equation. Yes, you have to have compassion for folks who are receiving the federal funds, but also you have to have compassion for the folks who are paying it. And that is one of the things that is new about this president's budget.
Now, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can critique what Mulvaney first just said. You could use the actual budget numbers and talk about how not only over the course of the 10 years that are outlined in this budget, not only would domestic discretionary dollars be slashed, but military spending would be double the rest of the discretionary budget. It soars to $722 billion. Now, but that's not really the real problem with what Mulvaney's saying. It shows that it's just full of crap. Because I don't really hear people clamoring for more military spending above where we are now. We have already, we are already spending more on our military than the rest of the world, like, combined. And, but the idea that taxpayers are burdened in some fashion by taxes now, as opposed to some other time in our history, is absurd. It is utterly absurd. The wealthy in this country are paying such a smaller percentage of their income in taxes relative to where we have been at historical levels. You know, during the Eisenhower administration, every dollar above what would be now, I think, around $3 million in today's money. I think then it was around $470,000. Every dollar, 90 cents of it, would be taxed. The advent of capital gains taxes being significantly less than wage taxes. The idea that wage taxes for Social Security now capture a far less percentage of our national income than it used to. And that, of course, is a function of income disparity. So much of the money is going to so few people that once you hit that $120,000 cap, that money's just not being captured by wage, by Social Security and FICA taxes. So, I mean, it's just absurd, the premise of this. And it's just amazing to me that they can actually go out and articulate this. They are so out of touch with the American public at this point that they just simply say, like, we've got to show compassion for the wealthy who are paying taxes. Absurd.
It's grotesque to hear. I mean, you know that's what they think and that's what they're trying to do.
Just said,
but to hear him say it is grotesque, and
it also just shows like how completely out of touch they are with real human beings, with normal people, normal human beings. But going through the numbers here. Plan calls for $1 trillion in cuts to a wide range of social programs with millions of beneficiaries, including farm subsidies and federal student aid. $600 billion cut to Medicaid over 10 years. That is in addition to the proposed $800 billion cut in the ACHA, the repeal and replace planned by the Republicans. Also cuts federal food stamp program and Social Security disability insurance, despite the fact that Trump promised not to cut Social Security and Medicare. He goes on, Mick Mulvaney, there's a certain philosophy wrapped up in the budget. And that is, we are no longer going to measure compassion by the number of programs or the number of people on those programs. Because what you lose in compassion for those people, you gain in compassion for the wealthy people paying taxes.
Do some trickle-down compassion.
Yeah. We need folks to work. We need people to go to work. If you're on food stamps and you're able-bodied, we need you to go to work. Now, the reason why food stamps, folks, so many more people are on food stamps now than in, say, 2008, was a function of there not being jobs. And even with the jobs that have returned, you still have many people who are just simply not making enough money. So the huge bonus of $200 a month in some instances to buy food is probably not making people say, like, eh, I'm just going to kick back. There's a dignity to work, and there's a necessity to work, said Mulvaney. The child tax credit for low-income families would also be cut. Cash assistance cut. $200 billion cut from the food stamp program, which helps feed 44 million people each year. They would also cut $72 billion for disability insurance, part of the Social Security program. Remember, they'll tell you that there's all sorts of fraud involved in Social Security disability, but and despite the, what was it, This American Life story, fewer than 40% of people who apply to Social Security disability get approved for benefits. You have many rejected applicants who spend years and years applying and reapplying. The program has grown in enrollment over the past couple of years because of, and Matt, I'm sure, or Kelly, both of you guys could figure out why. Why might there be more people who are starting to get injured in our workforce?
Well, first of all, there's more people.
Warmer. Yes. Well, that's basically it. It's not just that there are more people. There are more older people because of the baby boom. And as people get old, as I am understanding myself, the opportunity to get injured is greater. Let's listen to...
I have a question real quick. Does the food stamps cut... Do you know if it affects WIC? I'm not sure if that is a state name from Pennsylvania that I know of, but for children, you can automatically get...
I have not seen the breakdown. I've just only seen basically top lines, so I don't know.
They want these people to die. That's the goal.
I don't know that they think about it. I think they just want to have compassion for taxpayers, Kelly. But here's Representative Hal Rogers from Kentucky. I'm actually sort of enjoying this response. I'm deeply concerned about the severity of the domestic cuts, Representative Hal Rogers, Republican from Kentucky, longtime member of the House Appropriations Committee, told Politico. Rogers has been an outspoken critic of Trump's proposed cuts to programs that benefit rural regions like his home state, like the Appalachian Regional Commission. I think we do need healthcare reform. I think we do need welfare reform. But the kinds of reductions that he's talking about go exactly against the states that brought Trump to the dance, so to speak. In other words, can you please cut stuff for places with big rural, with big urban populations, if you know what I mean, winkety winkety? The White House budget also has projections of 3% growth. Of course, that will come from all the tax cuts that people will be getting. Now, understand this about this budget. It will, the White House budget is simply a reflection of values. It is not, it is just simply a starting document. It is not the document the House will rewrite, will basically write its own budget. But they're getting very jammed up because the resolutions that they passed, the reconciliation resolutions that they passed to do health care and to do tax reform become null, essentially, and void, or end, I guess, as soon as they pass a resolution to pass this budget or a budget for 2018. So they're getting very jammed up. They may end up having to do a continuing resolution on that other budget, on the existing budget, because of that reason. But nevertheless, people should understand exactly what the what the Republican Party stands for and what they would get if they thought they could get it. And what they're aspiring to. Pretty disgusting stuff. Meanwhile, let me just get the paperwork here. I'm moving a little slow today, folks, because I had a little too much to drink last night.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
Whoa.
Very atypical of me. And I've lost my...
Were we partying or were we just relaxing?
Oh, no. I was... I went to a... A premiere showing of Neon Joe.
What's that?
The Werewolf Hunter.
What?
Yes, Cartoon Network.
You have a very secret life.
Yeah, that's a very. I just made it clear to thousands of people what I did last night.
No,
it's not
I'm
that
saying,
secret.
Well, I talked to you.
Well, I didn't.
Every day.
I forgot that I was going to do that. And I almost forgot that I did it. But you know what? I'll tell you this. Stamps. Stamps.com. will save you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. Folks, if you're in a business, and we occasionally go through times here where we start sending a bunch of stuff out, nothing saves you time like stamps.com. Click, print, mail, you're done. You create your stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease, no long-term commitments. And unlike the post office, stamps.com never closes. So you want to do your work at 2 in the morning? You do it at 2 in the morning. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7, 7 days a week. Well, I guess 24/7 is redundant, right? It's 24/7, 365. Very convenient, super easy, and also totally reliable. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Never leave your office or your home again for anything. I mean, if you bring in enough supplies. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates the exact postage. They'll even help you decide what's the best class of mail based upon your needs. No need to lease an expensive postage meter, any of that. Right now, you too can enjoy Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in my code MAJORITYREPORT. That's stamps.com, enter MAJORITYREPORT. That is the name of this program, MAJORITYREPORT. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Here is Bernie Sanders campaigning with Rob Quist. This was on Saturday of this week. Thursday is the special election. And know that right now, poll came out, I guess it came out today. In the Georgia 6th District race, John Ossoff running against Karen Handel, 51% to 44%, with 6% undecided. So I guess the 6% and the 51% are rounded up, or one figure is, because it's 101%. But this is it's pretty good numbers. I don't know what's going to change the dynamic in that race. But here is Bernie Sanders pushing for Quist in Montana.
You know, when Rob began his campaign, a lot of people would say, well, you know, he's an interesting guy. He can play the guitar. He can sing. He's a poet. Wow, that's really cool. But he's not serious. He can't really win this election. Well, guess what? Just came back from Washington on Thursday. You have gotten the Republican leadership very, very nervous.
There you go. And they're also pretty nervous, I think, about what's happening in Georgia. All of this has big implications, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again, has even bigger implications for our politics than most, than really, I think, you know, short of the special election for Ted Kennedy in the midst of attempting to do healthcare reform and losing that seat to Scott Brown. These races, though they will not change the balance of power in the House, will certainly change the calculations of Republicans and the ability for the Trump administration to get stuff through. With that said, there is still stuff that Trump is doing that we don't hear very much about because of all the other stories, and we'll get to that in a moment. There was hearings today. Senate Armed Services Committee And I think the House Intel Committee. Turns out James Comey will not be testifying this week. He may testify next week because Mueller wants to meet with Comey to hear more about his memo. But as reported in the Huffington Post, Dodd-Frank basically now just shattered. One of the key rules came out of Dodd-Frank was the Volcker Rule. And according to Keith Broyette and Woods, analyst Brian Gardner, in a note to clients, examiners can start giving banks the benefit of the doubt regarding compliance with the Volcker Rule almost immediately because Trump's council of top regulators essentially have now said that they are reinterpreting the rule's purpose. The Volcker Rule basically prevented banks from proprietary trading. So they could not use their money, essentially, to make trades. And therefore couldn't do stuff like betting against their own clients. On top of the Volcker Rule getting quashed, the rules for derivative regulations and even capital requirements are basically under assault and are nearly in a position to be basically just regulators are just going to look the other way. So we won't know if those Dodd-Frank rules were insufficient, because they won't be around anymore. Donald Trump elections have consequences, folks. I know that's like imagining a moon falling into a lake, but it's true. It's true. All right, let's news story last night about Donald Trump apparently approached Daniel Coats, who is the director of national intelligence, and Mike Rogers, the director of the National Security Agency, and asked them to deny the any evidence of collusion during the 2016 election, and also asked them to please, can you guys get Comey to back off? Here is, now this is reported by two sources, two current and two former officials. Now, I don't know what the parlance is for officials, but I just imagine Pence just sitting there going like, yeah, okay, click, thank you for. Here is a sound this morning of Dan Coats asked by John McCain during the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, if these reports are true, what do you say? What would you say if you're Dan Coats and these reports are not true? I suspect you would say, ha, that's not true. But this is what Dan Coats had to say.
Director Coats, according to the Washington Post story this morning, President Trump asked two of the nation's top intelligence officials in March to help him push back against an FBI investigation into possible coordination between his campaign and the Russian government. According to current and former officials, Trump made separate appeals to the Director of National Intelligence, Daniel Coats, and to Admiral Michael S. Rogers, the Director of the NSA, urging them to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion during the 2016 elections. Coats and Rogers refused to comply with the request, which they both deemed to be inappropriate. Yeah. Is that an accurate reporting, Director Coats?
Mr. Chairman, as the President's principal intelligence advisor, I'm fortunate to be able and need to spend a significant amount of time with the President discussing national security interest and intelligence as it relates to those interests. We discuss a number of topics on a very regular basis. I have always believed that given the nature of my position and the information in which we share, it's not appropriate for me to comment publicly on any of that. So on this topic, as well as other topics, I don't feel it's appropriate to characterize discussions and conversations with the president.
Did he mean to say, no, none of that's true? It goes on. It's not just whether or not he was asked to deny the existence of any evidence of collusion. Apparently, they were also asked to get Comey to back off. Trump's conversation with Rogers was documented contemporaneously in an internal memo written by a senior NSA official, according to the officials. It's unclear if a similar memo was prepared by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, that would be Coates, to document Trump's conversation with Coates. Officials said such memos could be made available to both the special counsel now overseeing the Russia investigation and congressional investigators who might explore whether Trump sought to impede the FBI's work. Like, this guy's so stupid. And there's also clearly, I mean, it's not clear who these officials are. I would imagine one of the sources would have to have come from the NSA, who was read into this memo. And I would imagine one of the sources has to come from somewhere in the Directorate of National Intelligence. But maybe they come from the White House. Maybe there was just somebody sitting there. Jared was taking notes and just told somebody. But Donald Trump is really going to go down as one of the stupidest people ever to hold any office, I think, not just the presidency, because you just can't do that. And maybe, you know, I want to know why these guys aren't being asked if they were asked to give a loyalty oath to him. Because for some reason, he was under the impression that they were all much more loyal than Comey was.
That'd be something that'd be harder to hide behind. I can't divulge that for the interest of national security, too.
Yeah, exactly. You really don't characterize even conversations you didn't have with the president. Here is former CIA director John Brennan. He was at the House Intelligence Committee discussing what he found in terms of the Trump campaign that required FBI investigation. Again, you know, a guy like John Brennan, I wouldn't, I don't believe very much of what he says. But nevertheless, this is testimony that I think people on this committee are taking seriously.
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign that I was concerned about because of known Russian efforts to suborn such individuals. And it raised questions in my mind, again, whether or not the Russians were able to gain the cooperation of those individuals. I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know. But I know that there was a sufficient basis of information and intelligence that required further investigation by the Bureau to determine whether or not U.S. persons were actively conspiring, colluding with Russian officials.
And that was after that was in addressing Trey Gowdy. Indeed. Update on what we talked about yesterday regarding the Obamacare payments. Yesterday, the White House was to address whether or not they would continue to fight a lawsuit that is being brought by the essentially the Republican caucus in the House. And had they decided not to continue to fight that lawsuit, it would mean about 7 million Americans would lose the subsidies that allow them to afford their health care. Trump has threatened to do this multiple times. What they ended up doing was that they asked for a 90-day delay. However, what they're doing by doing this is basically creating a lot of uncertainty for insurers, which means that their potential profits are threatened, and they're threatened with potential great losses. Obviously, you know, what the play here for the White House is to try and make Obamacare fail by not allowing insurers to plan for what their risk pool is going to look like. And so the White House moves on and punts for 90 days. But nevertheless, the uncertainty continues for insurers, and the threat still looms. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. And in the fun half, we will... There's some pretty funny clips of Donald Trump. I mean, the upside of having one of the world's stupidest people be your president is that you sometimes get some funny moments when he's in foreign countries, completely thrown off, apparently, by all sorts of things involving where he is, his attempt to pull Bibi Netanyahu's hand off of his arm. Trump inadvertently divulged more so dumb, more secret information. We will get to all of that and more. Michael will be here tomorrow. I'm going to take a quick break. Take your phone calls and your IM, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back. Oh, don't forget, it is your support that helps this show continue. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. See you in the fun half. No.